Anyway, this is Taylor Report, and I believe we're joined by Kim Sipes. Are you there, Professor Sipes?
Yes, I am, Phil.
Hey, it's great, great to hear your voice. You know, we talked to you some months back, and you were preparing to attend in Philadelphia for the convention of the AFL-CIO, and there were going to be lectures, et cetera, and there was, I think there was, you had hopes that some union representatives would be getting the floor or trying to get resolutions. So we're all, frankly, we'd like to know what happened. Can you talk about, what did you make of the AFL-CIO convention?
Okay. Well, this took place in Philadelphia in early June. It's their national convention. They generally have one every 4 years. This was a group of us who we formed an organization with the acronym LAPIO. You'll see why I use an acronym. It really stands for Labor Education Project on the AFL-CIO International Operations.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll keep it at LAPIO.
All right.
Anyway, we had been trying to raise the issue of the AFL-CIO's international operations. Now, you have to understand, these have been going on before the AFL and the CIO merged in 1955. They've actually been going on since the late 1890s.
Mm-hmm.
And during this time, the AFL and the AFL-CIO have never given an honest report of what they're doing. Members don't know. In fact, most of the leaders of the AFL-CIO don't know about their foreign policy and their operations overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something I've been working on for years. We had a big protest in 2005 in Chicago. We were going back to Philadelphia to rejoin the issue, and we went there. And that convention was one of the deadest things I've ever seen. For example, I mean, it was in the Pennsylvania Convention Center, big, magnificent building. And if you didn't know what was going on, there were no signs on the outside saying anything was going on. I mean, they claimed to support American labor movement.
Uh-huh.
But it was dead. There was nothing going on. I've seen more enthusiasm at academic conferences, and that's a slam, put it that way. You had a few people that looked like they might be workers, but most of them were staff members out of AFL CIO headquarters in D.C. that had come to Philly for a few days, I guess. So what we did is several of us we had developed a flyer about LAPIO and about the issues we were raising, and we stood outside the main entrance and talked to people and gave flyers, and eventually a bunch of them got taken inside the building. We weren't allowed in. They had police around. We can't let those workers go get inside, you know.
My goodness.
It was really depressing, to be honest.
I have to ask you, I noticed something that, again, to underline, just looking at the basic facts, the president was elected by acclamation. Then they had 55 members of the executive, acclamation.
Yeah.
And then they had a bunch of, you know, they had conference report, but was there any debate? Do they ever get shouted at each other or get to the microphone and do things that we used to see it or believed happened at, you know, in the old days of union?
Not that I'm aware of. It was all settled beforehand. It was just a party of sort of insiders, if you will. They had a good time, but I won't say it didn't happen, but one, I didn't hear anything about it. I certainly didn't get inside to see it, but mm-hmm. there was no indication of any discussion, any controversy or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I read about it that the one, it's a phrase that when people went to mics would make apparently throughout the time of the convention was that Joe Biden is the most pro-labor administration in U.S. history. Can you tell me? Did he get rid of the Taft-Hartley, or did he bring in the Wagner Act, or was it Wagner? Anyway.
Yes, I think it's Wagner, but no, he didn't do anything such as that. Of course, that happened under Franklin Roosevelt back in the 1930s. There hasn't been much since. But no, the Taft-Hartley Act has not been repealed. They gave up on that years ago. And truthfully, most of the leadership didn't even fight Taft-Hartley when it was being forced down their throat.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a labor movement. Well, there's not much movement in the labor movement. And in fact, Labor notes an alternative network says they want to put movement into the labor movement. Because there's not much there. It's pretty depressing.
Yeah.
There's not much sign of life there.
I have to say that would describe the Canadian Labor Congress. I mean, it's increasingly what you see your staff and they use the word movement. But frankly, I think everybody understands that labor movement seems to be, I guess the word would be stalled. Everybody's talking about organizing, but there are very few successes that I'm aware of.
Right. And many of the successes, like here in the States, we've had, there's been an explosion of organizing Starbucks. This has basically been workers on their own deciding that they're going to start a union.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, and there's some people that are getting real excited about that down here. This is a revitalization of the 1930s, and it's a far cry from that. I mean, I'm glad to see any workers come together to unionize, but what's the strategic value of Starbucks? I mean, even if all the Starbucks in the country went out, what impact is that going to have?
Yeah.
Other than make some people extremely nervous just because they haven't gotten their caffeine for the day.
Mm-hmm. No, that actually, when I look at it, that's the impression I get. And even we hear about these, like the Amazon workers, but it seems to, that is one locals in New York or New Jersey, and it isn't even part of the FLCIO that I know about.
No, they're an independent, or they were an independent movement, union. I don't know if they've joined a union or not. I know the retail workers were involved in the union in Alabama, that the Amazon effort to unionize in Alabama, which ultimately failed. But I think they got a court order to redo that election.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much that. There's not much vibrancy that I can see that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to compare this, I went to the Labor Notes conference. Like I say, this is a network, an alternative labor network, includes people from across North America. So there were a lot of Canadians there, and a lot of enthusiasm. Had about 4,000 people show up, and they were excited, and it was like night and day. Unfortunately, for better or worse, I mean, what we're having is a generational change. You've got us, I'm 70, as older folks are kind of fading out. Got a lot of new blood that's exciting, but they don't have much experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, they haven't really tried to learn from us. So a lot of enthusiasm, not a lot of experience or knowledge.
Mm-hmm. The issue that you address, and you have often the title, labor imperialism, couldn't this be a major part of what the problem is? I mean, if labor is, as the old expression, in bed with management abroad, mm-hmm. they're probably in bed with them locally as well, but also over time, they are stuck with each other, right, or stuck to them. You're not allowed to challenge, as far as I can see, and you've given wonderful accounts of it, the story you like to tell, the California union that said, we don't agree with the foreign policy, I forget the issue, but foreign policy, and the AFL-CIO simply turned it inside out and said, yes, we do. But, I mean, how can you go to conventions and meet one another if you can't challenge the basic thinking of the people who employ you?
Well, I think that's an essential point. The larger problem, though, Phil, I would argue, is not so much being in bed with management, although you've got that in some cases. I mean, at best, you have some unions that will fight management in some cases. But when we're talking foreign policy, they're in bed with the U.S. government and with the CIA, et cetera.
Yes.
The term I've come up with, though not original, but I seem to be one of the few using it anymore, is empire. And basically, the U.S., you know, the U.S. is trying to dominate the world. The AFL-CIO thinks the U.S. should dominate the world.
Yes.
And they're willing to work to help whatever they can. Mm. Now, this leads to some strange situations. For example, you might have heard in Mexico earlier this summer, there were some GM workers at a plant in Silao, Mexico, down central Mexico, that were able to create a successful union, and they were victorious. They won, and yet the AFL-CIO was helping them. Well, mm-hmm. This is strange. The AFL-CIO is getting $75 million a year now from the U.S. government. Mm-hmm. So what's going on? What it looks to me is
bingo.
What it looks to me is that, you know, Mexico's economy is in bad shape. It's long been dominated by the U.S., U.S. investors. And yet there's, you know, you've got this string of migration into the southwestern United States, and it's not stopping. So mm-hmm. my guess is they want to revitalize the Mexican economy enough to keep Mexicans down there with jobs. So they're allowing them to, so they want to have them have them to start unionizing, but they want to make damn sure it stays under their control. There's just corporate business unions and stuff like that.
I have a similar impression. Matter of fact, you took my question away from me because I was going to ask you that very point. I want to know if they're giving, and the figures I've heard, you mentioned $75 million, the U.S. government, and by the way, the Canadian government, too, through the union Unifor, they are paying for personnel and to headquarters in Mexico. And I want to know, and they label the guys they give the money to independent. And I want to mm-hmm. know, if you're giving them money, how do you get off calling them independent?
You're thinking too much, Phil. We can't have that.
I'll knock it off. You're right. I should forget. Yeah. No, but I read their rhetoric, actually, and I got some of this from reading AFL-CIO, and they were talking about this phenomenon of the Mexican workers. It's a plant of 6,000. It's going to be interesting to follow that over time. But they are using words like they're talking about the established trade union movement, and there is one in Mexico, whether anybody likes it or not. It actually has been there a long time.
Right.
And they call them a protection union, and they call these other guys independent. And they have a meeting where the AFL-CIO goes, their personnel, and the Canadian Labor Congress goes, but the established Mexican union, I think it's a TUC or something, at any rate, they're not invited.
Yeah.
Well, I don't get it. I mean, I don't like any of you guys, but that would be my position. 1, 2, 3, I'm not admiring any of them, but how do the Canadian and U.S. unions get to talk about an established trade union organization in Mexico, and they don't even get invited to a meeting?
Right. Well, it's a bigger thing than that. I mean, the overall Mexican Labor Center is called the CTM, and I'm not going to torture anybody with trying to pronounce it. I don't speak Spanish. But anyway, they have served as sort of the corporate wing for the Mexican state since 1929. Mm-hmm. And they have been used to keep labor under control in Mexico. So there have been long struggles to create independent unions that are not controlled by the CTM.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new book out called El Golpe, which means the coup. This is subtitle is U.S. Labor, the CIA, and the Coup of Four in Mexico. And what happened in the very early 90s was that you did have an independent union develop in a Mexican Ford plant outside of Mexico City. And the AFL-CIO's regional organization, AFIL, the American Institute for Free Labor Development, supposedly, the CIA, et cetera, worked with Ford and brought 300 thugs into the plant, shot 8 Mexicans and assassinated 1, the Mexican workers, and broke that union. Hmm. So the CTM was involved in that. The CTM has been just used to control workers.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, any effort to bring out the CTM is independent. However, you raise a crucial issue. If they're getting funding by the CLC or the AFL-CIO, they're obviously not independent. What are these people wanting? And like mm-hmm. I say, our analysis in LaPaio is that they're willing to allow unions to exist, but only strictly controlled unions and controlled by the U.S.
Yes. That's a phenomenon. I mean, they now, for example, insist to the Mexican government, you have to allow us to be there. You know, they had, I saw the AFL-CIO said, well, we noticed that you have the ILO, but that isn't good enough. You have to have other independent people. And they say, we want to know what your protocols are going to be for that. And strikes me, from the Mexican government point of view, I think they ought to say, who are you again? You seem
well,
like, our guys are as loyal to us as your guys are loyal to you.
and this is something nobody wants to admit, but it's true. You're absolutely right. And the AFL-CIO is not, I would argue. Now, some people think that the American labor movement is guided by outsiders such as anywhere from the President of the United States to the State Department to the CIA, whatever. And I disagree. I mean, my research over the last 40 years has shown that these efforts to dominate workers is basically comes from within the top levels of the labor movement.
Yes.
These guys are there on their own. They're not being forced to do anything. They think their stuff doesn't stink and that they know better.
Yes.
And so they're out telling everybody else how to do things, but they're not doing anything here at the U.S. even for American or Canadian mm-hmm. workers either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just a big charade.
That has always been an issue amongst people who study labor movements and socialist movements. Is always the material interest of what we call class collaborators. I mean,
right.
People find themselves. I remember you must know the name Paul Jacobs. You remember he wrote the book State of the Unions?
Right.
And he said, people outside the labor movement don't understand this, outside workers. He said, when a guy goes from carrying a thermos, drinking his tea or coffee out of a thermos, to sitting in an office having coffee, he says, you have a serious class advance. That he now looks at the world with different eyes.
Yes. Yes, he does.
He does not want to go back to that thermos. He probably would kill to keep that, to stay in that office.
Yeah, I think a lot of them would.
Yeah.
And, that they're doing their stuff. Go ahead.
Shouldn't we challenge them on that basis? I mean, shouldn't we say, hey, what are you doing there? If you're putting money in, why don't you tell us about it? And you're putting in, and who is receiving the money? Like there's now, I would call them apparatchiks or something from the AFL-CIO, CLC, Unifor, steelworkers too, by the way.
Right.
They're setting up, they say, we have an office in Mexico City. It's called the House of the Workers, of course. But these are a bunch of Americans and Canadians and their employees who, by the way, as you know, if you're working for the guy, you'd like to keep that job. So, when he comes and asks your advice, you're trying to figure out what should I say to keep my job? But why don't we challenge everybody to say, tell us about what you're doing here?
We see that hasn't happened much. We've just seen something a little bit about that within the United Auto Workers, the American Auto Workers, where that for the first time in their history they've had direct elections.
And ooh, one person, one vote.
Yes, what a concept.
Scary.
But they just had a convention last month in I think it's in July, end of July, very early August, I can't remember, in which they just got the right to vote, direct elections for the presidency. And there was some controversy there, which is very unusual because when Walter Reuther came into office in 1946, by 1947, he had that union stood down tight. He had every vote on the executive committee. And there hasn't been a serious debate, as far as I can tell, for all that year. What's that, 60, 70 years, something like that. Yeah. So this was a step forward.
That's called tradition. That's tradition.
Yeah, right. So you have struggles that pop up now and then in different unions. But there's not been an effort. The last time even that this foreign policy stuff had been challenged, like I said earlier, was in 2005 in Chicago. Now, what we had done that year, I was involved in that, and my friend Fred Hirsch, the late Fred Hirsch, in California, he and some others got the California State AFL-CIO, so the state-level organization, to unanimously condemn the AFL-CIO foreign policy at their biannual convention. So their resolution went to the national level, condemning the AFL's foreign policy, and it got changed by the resolutions committee to one praising the AFL-CIO's foreign policy. And then it was brought to the convention. Our people weren't allowed to even discuss it.
or mention it had been changed.
Oh, yeah. No, this was pretty blatant. So, they just really gutted labor democracy exists in the labor in the U.S. labor movement like a fish, and so it's a little hard to get people motivated to keep trying to fight that when it's so loaded for the top dogs.
Yes,
that they can just take. I mean, this was the California AFL-CIO at the time was 1/6 of the entire AFL, and Fred and his people had done a great job in organizing. Done a great job. We've been doing lots of work out in California. But, a lot of parts of the United States aren't near as open or willing to discuss things and things like that. California's got a more open culture.
Yes.
But other places don't, and they wouldn't take it up.
Yeah.
So this is the first time. So 2022, that's 17 years after the last time this was raised.
Yeah. By the way, now, UAW is part of the AFL-CIO, right?
Right.
And you would hope, I understand this all happened quickly. They have only just recently had their first, or maybe it's coming, actually. They haven't had that first vote, have they? I'm trying to remember. They agreed to do it.
No, it'll be in October, I believe. The end of October is what I
think. We're speaking to Kim Sipes, by the way. But Kim, wouldn't that be something you would advocate for the whole AFL-CIO?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
No more acclamations? though it's a tradition.
I tell you what, Phil, we'll all be 25 and regain our looks before that'll happen. Let's put it that way.
Maybe, perhaps we could get attract the interest of the Mexican government in the, and help, maybe they would help us with an independent union here.
Yeah. I wish they would.
By the way, how about farm workers who are mainly Mexican? How about all the agricultural labor who gets ripped off and still to this day throughout the American Southwest, certainly in Canada, we have among the labor scandals in Canada are those involving farm workers who are just brought in here and ripped off, basically. And they're, as you know, agricultural labor is the most dangerous there is. I would hope that Mexico might ask about that.
Well, I think basically Mexico is their economy is just not set up for their people. I mean, it's basically for the U.S. Unfortunately, But Mexico's happy that those people are getting out because they won't cause trouble for Mexico if they're in the state. And I think they're going along with it. The Mexican government traditionally has gone along with whatever the U.S. has wanted.
Yes.
So that's not a very vibrant possibility, in my opinion.
It's interesting that we now have this thing, the Canadian-U.S.-Mexican free trade agreement. And it's, by the way, that's the vehicle through which these unions, CLC and the FL-CIO, are butting into in a big way. They cite, they said, well, we have the agreement. Now we're here now to straighten out your unions. And you, you say, well, that isn't, in, I don't, where is that in the agreement?
Right.
Incident, we find it very remarkable. Canada is 100% with the U.S. Sanctions and full negative approach to the situation in Ukraine, but noticeably and never mentioned in Canada is that Mexico isn't going along with the sanctions. Their trade with Russia is going up.
Now, that's interesting. To be honest, I hadn't known that either.
Yeah. Well, it is a secret because they speak Spanish, and that's their tough luck. The Toronto Star doesn't have to tell people this, but it is a fact. Yes. No. As not a, as a matter of fact, the man they call AMLO has even condemned the approach that NATO took, saying that you're as responsible as anyone for the crisis that's going on there. That's
absolutely.
That is
absolutely
not shared here. And though this is our big new partner, by the way, I don't think most Canadians and Americans think that Mexico is part of North America. They think it must be South America.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. There's an incredible lack of knowledge about Mexico, especially in our country. I won't speak for yours.
Yeah.
But it's terrible in our country. And, you know, we don't know much. And then, of course, Americans aren't told much about the rest of the world except by the Washington Post and the New York Times. And they're lying like hell.
Yeah.
So, of course, that issue about Ukraine and how it's all Putin's fault, I condemn the invasion, but I also understand what happened because the U.S. and Canada have been at war with Russia since 1917, in my opinion, and certainly after the end of the Cold War. Yeah. By the way, if I could put in a plug, a friend of mine who lives in Toronto, a Canadian named Catherine Nostovsky, Dr. Catherine Nostovsky, is bringing a book out this, I believe it's this year, from the University of Toronto Press, on CLC's labor imperialism. So you all ought to look for that.
Bingo. You made my day. You see, I have to call somebody at Purdue to find out what's going on in Toronto. But I did. As they tell us, we're all connected and we know everything, but it turns out we don't. So that, by the way, I guarantee you, we're going to focus on that book. We'll maybe even try to get a preview of it if the author will help us. Because that's a very important topic. Canada has been the kind of silent partner with the U.S. and third world countries, as you used to call them, have to keep an eye on the Canadians when they're talking to the Americans. Sometimes the Canadian slips by, but it's a tag team and they work very efficiently together. That'd be my view. Certainly, as we're talking about the Mexican case, they absolutely agree on very pejorative language. Talking about the Central Labor Body of Mexico, they can just smear them out of hand when they could be confronted with exactly the same accusations.
Yes.
So,
yes. But we don't want to bring that up. By the way, if I may, my latest book is called Building Global Labor Solidarity, and my publisher had only brought it out in paperback, and now today I just got they only brought it out in hardback, and today they brought it out in paperback. So if people are interested, I'll give you a scope of the book. The subtitle is Lessons from the Philippines, South Africa, Northwestern Europe, and the United States. Mm-hmm. And it's out now in paperback from Lexington Press.
Well, we will get our hands on that, and we would definitely want to review it and talk to you about the book specifically. I know that you yourself get out and around. You've been to the Philippines and to South Africa, and are closely familiar with this. all these places have exactly this sort of problem at which you're the authority on, which is how U.S. labor is part of the game. And
yep.
And when they and so when the guy sidles up to the Philippine worker or South African says, I'm with you, I'm with labor, you got to say, let me have a look at their papers.
Yeah. No, this is a – I have literally, as of next year, I will have been doing global labor solidarity work for 40 years. And this is a compilation of some of my writings and thinking about these subjects. And I look at the world a little differently than a lot of labor people. So I think you and others might find it quite interesting.
Oh, we will indeed. I in the previous interview, I mentioned this to you. I wish we could revive the Anti-Imperialist League founded by William James and Mark Twain and others
right.
who identified just as you do that 1897, 98, that was it. And it
yeah.
was a big mistake and very damaging to the world, but also to Americans that would be saying American labor. And we should remind everyone that you know, the sane Americans said, don't do it. Don't be,
right.
do not become an empire. That's a way to get yourself, hurt other people and get yourself killed.
Yep. Yep. And a lot, it's been interesting, you know, Mark Twain is probably the most famous American writer of all time. And yet we're not taught in school that he opposed the Spanish-American War, and especially, he wrote some very scathing stuff about the U.S. war in the Philippines. Of course, you know, they killed about they killed about 500,000 to a million people, so 10 to 20% of the entire Filipino population between 1899 and 1903. And Twain was against that, but Americans are never taught about that.
Absolutely. No, actually, that's been pointed out over the years. Everybody said, oh, yes, Huck Finn, end of story. Well, no, or Tom Sawyer, end of story. Actually, he was a very angry individual, and what made him most angry was his empire business. I think maybe his Protestant side, he was against pride and arrogance,
yeah.
imperial arrogance. But I'm sure glad yeah. we're talking to you about it. This is Kim Sipes. The beauty of the internet, the name is spelled S-C-I-P-E-S. By the way, your talks are available there. I urge everybody to listen to them. But we will get the book. I'm very anxious to read that. Thank you for telling us about the Canadian author. We'll go to work on that one.
But Phil, before we cut off, can I suggest that people that want to know more about this stuff can go to the LaPaya website, and I can give you the URL if you want.
Okay. All right. Could you repeat that one more time?
Okay, this is the LaPaio, this Labor Education Project on the AFL-CIO International Operation. And the website is just AFL-CIO, all one word, no hyphen, but then a hyphen, INT, period, education.
Bingo, got it. We will get on that.
Okay.
Kim Sipes, it's a pleasure talking to you. You're doing great work, and we look forward to reading your book and talking to you about it.
That sounds good. I'd love to do that, Phil. I enjoy our conversation.
Great fun. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right.